Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew. Jesus said to his disciples, I tell you, unless your holiness surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees, you shall not enter the kingdom of God. You have heard the commandment imposed on your forefathers, you shall not commit murder. And every murderer will be liable to judgment. But what I say to you is, everyone who grows angry with his brother shall be liable to judgment. You have heard the commandment, you shall not commit adultery. What I say to you is, anyone who looks lustfully at a woman has already committed adultery with her in his thoughts. You have heard the commandment imposed on your forefathers, do not take a false oath. Rather, make good to the Lord all your pledges. What I tell you is, do not swear at all. Say yes when you mean yes and no when you mean no. Anything beyond that is from the evil one. The Gospel of the Lord. That sounds like pretty important stuff, right? Convince me. Really does. So I better come down here and talk to you about the importance of this. I wish we had those pads because I have a lot of questions for you. And I'd love to know and understand the answers. And if you could just punch in your answer, I'll ask the questions. I'd like to see where we are at, how we really are in terms of response to some of these questions. First question, why did you come here today? Did you come because you wanted to be with your family? Did you come because the family was coming and you thought it was okay? Can register if you like there. Did you come because of some personal or very specific reason that there's somebody that you were concerned about at the present time? You really wanted to pray for them in this Eucharist? Go ahead, register if you got a vote. Ushers, you can count them, okay? Did you come because you felt you had to? On that question last night at the 5:30 Mass, we had one of the altar servers put up his hand, and his parents were very proud of him. They were sitting right here, and I had to congratulate Jemison, because for somebody who came because he had to, he sang absolutely unbelievably. He was standing here, and he sang his responses to the Holy Holy, and he was the medalist last night for participation, even though he came because he had to. Done it many times, in fact, did it for years, came because we had to. How many people came because they had to? How many people came because you'd be afraid if you don't go, somebody is going to get you, and that's kind of what you learned along the way? Punch in your numbers, please. How many of you came because you saw this is a real opportunity for personal growth and development? How many of you came because you're in the confirmation class and you felt you had to come because we made that agreement, right? You're going to be here because it makes no sense to present myself for confirmation if I choose to go to class just to get through and then not come to Eucharist. Why in the world would I do it? It's asinine. Absolutely. So why did you come? Did you come because you wanted to experience community, how important that one is. We will never, ever, I think, absolutely understand the whole measure of that one. Jesus wants us to live as community, central to his instruction and teaching all the way along. Growing in a community of Christ, how important, you can never overemphasize that sufficiently. Did you come because you wanted to do something about your personal growth? Did you come because you wanted to hear me preach? Thank you. Good. And the rest of you, yeah, thank you too. Okay? One day that'll happen. You'll be coming because that's a part of it as well. But a lot of others would say, get on with it, okay? You're holding up. Man, I got to be out of here. Did you come because it's the law? That's a big one. Big one. We've certainly worked that one pretty well. Let me ask you another way. If there was not a law about coming on Sunday, would you come? Don't tell me. Tell you. That's a very important one in terms of our growth and development. Interesting, all of the readings are reflective of law. And we've done a marvelous job in terms of law in the Catholic tradition. I know a whole lot about the laws of the Catholic Church because my grandmother made sure that I did. And that God was around me everywhere and he was going to like me if I did this and he was not going to be proud of me or happy. In fact, he was going to be pretty chapped at me if I did some of the other things, you know. I learned those laws. Did you learn them? Good. You had good teachers along the way. That's part of the package. But I'll get back to the package later because we're going to talk about law for a while. So I'm not going to tell you everything today. That's the good news, right? You're happy with that. Because law is coming up next week in the Gospel, continuing Matthew's, and then the following week, and then we take a break, we get to Ash Wednesday, and we move into the focus readings for Lenten season. But I'd like to talk more about law in the next 2 weeks. But law is pretty important. We have a variety of perceptions about law, right? How many people feel it, the law is an inhibiting factor? Wow. You sure? You ever find it inhibiting? My Lord, what is all of Christianity about with its laws and regulations? You ever find them cumbersome? Come on, let's try that one. You ever find them cumbersome? I find them awfully cumbersome sometimes when I look at just the law. If I go deeper, I will find something else. Our perceptions of the law and seeing the law as something to be manipulated or moved around or whatever, there are a lot of people who walk around in life and they say, that's kind of what I got to do. I got to see how I can go this far. Hey, as Catholics, we have a wonderful thing, you know. How far can I go without it being a mortal sin, yeah? Sure, you know that one. Come on, don't lie. Sure you do. Hey, how far can we push the barriers without it really being that significant? We all, law generates a lot of that stuff on a very basic level for us. Let me tell you a perspective. Soren Kierkegaard, great philosopher and teacher, great behaviorist, developed the theory of behavior. He called it the three stages of the way of life. Essentially, the three stages of moral development in the life of a human being. Very valued in behavioral terms and understanding. And the three stages are, the first is the aesthetical stage, where it's all about aesthetics. It's about outside stuff, but essentially the aesthetical stage is about me. You know that one? God, we've got such an abundance of it in our life, in our country, in our experience. It's about me. It's about what I want. It's about what I want to do, what I want to be, when I want to do it, how I want to do it, where I want to do it, where I want to be. It's alive and well, very intensely the aesthetical stage. That's the first stage of encountering or experiencing law. The second stage is called the ethical stage. The ethical stage begins to unfold for a person essentially when they begin to realize, well, it really isn't all about me. There are other people in the world. And other people's views and perspectives are equally important to mine. And maybe not of equally important, at least they're significantly important. Hopefully we learn that experience, the ethical experience, in a good way in our teen years. But one of the best ways to learn it, get married. Really. Then you're taking somebody else into your life, and it becomes really important, and hopefully your life becomes permeated with questions like, how would she feel about that? Hey, as a bachelor, I could do that stuff, you know? I could leave the dishes pile up for a week, you know? And then I would tackle them on a Saturday, you know? How would she feel about that? I could blow all of my savings on a vacation that I really could ill afford. How would she feel about that? The ethical stage brings in questions from others that it's not all about me. It's about other people as well. And as a teenager, hopefully you find it out pretty good because you hang out with some people and they will tell you rather quickly, hey, it's not all about you. You know, and it's not all about what you want to do. And you temper your experience and you begin to allocate some space for them and their thoughts and their ideas and their opportunities. And then when you grow beyond the ethical stage, you have the religious stage, which is the third level of development. And you begin to realize and integrate the reality that there's a greater power than me and there's a greater power than thee or than the others. And it's very influential in my life. It's a very powerful understanding. Now, in regards to law, in the first stage, in the aesthetical stage, somebody sees law as a hindrance to my freedom. It's a very basic stage. We go through that stage, every single one of us. Problem is, if we stay there for the rest of our lives, man, there's no growth. Absolutely zero growth and development from that stage and that perspective because it just remains all about me, what I want, when I want, and how I want it. Second stage, when I begin to integrate relationships and other people into my life experience, they begin to condition my understanding of law. And I see the law as an invitation to growth. That it's good for me, it's good for them. They get some of their needs met. I have some of my needs met. When you move into the third stage of growth and development, the religious experience, what is it? I see law as an invitation to love. See that responsorial psalm today? What did it say? Blessed are they. Thank you. Who follow, sing it again, who follow the law of the Lord. Now, we tend not to think of it that way. And for us as Catholics, I think it's particularly important because, man, I learned more laws before I was 5 years of age, you know? And they weren't attractive. And it sure did not enhance my relationship with God. In fact, I thought to myself quite honestly, man, I don't want to have a relationship with that God. Because that's what it does when you see law purely from an aesthetic stage of growth and development. Don't hinder me. Don't hinder my freedom. That becomes the big thing. We've had stages and ages of that in our country, development. Hey, I just want to be free. Well, the law is one of the greatest helps to freedom. That's what Jesus was saying in the gospel today. Did you notice it? He said, I know you've heard, it was said to your fathers, you shall not murder. I know you've heard, you shall not commit adultery. I know you've heard that you shall not swear. And there were a whole series more of them that Jesus outlined in the gospel today. We just moved around them and took the shorter version. But what he was saying is, hey, following the law does not get us there. Remember the opening statement of the gospel? He said, unless your holiness surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees, you won't enter the kingdom. You can be absolutely brilliant in terms of keeping laws, but that's not the question. The question is, how am I in relationship to him? And the only purpose and value of law is so that it would give direction to people. If I see the law as just being punitive, where's the judge? Judge, yes. You don't believe in that? The law is being punitive. No, the law is to encourage and bring about the best response and best reaction. That's the purpose of the law. The other thing about the law, we are provided choice. Choice, central to choice, or central to freedom, is choice. If I have no choice, then there is no freedom. It means I am simply going in a singular direction that is mapped out by somebody else. Freedom comes into the picture when I'm able to make the choices. So there's always this one, and there's always that one and that one. There is always salvation, but there is also damnation. That's how we understand them. On the opposite, the polar opposite side, there is always the other piece in our reflection and in our thinking. But how we move through stages of growth and development are extremely significant. If I stay at the aesthetical stage, then I'm going to see law as an imposition and a negative perspective all of the time. If I move into a realization it's not all about me and it's about others, then I begin to see where the psalmist is coming from. Blessed are they who follow the law of the Lord. And if I am in the religious stage, then I am powerfully in touch with that. That is real important. The law, how we perceive the law. And I think for us as Catholics, we heard so much about law. We are very well versed in law and understanding, but we know little about relationship. The law is directed toward bringing us into relationship, but we stopped with the law, I think. Leads to a great extent. So we know the laws, but we don't know the person. That's the great difficulty and the great challenge, and we will continue looking at that as we go along. When I was growing up, I played soccer. I loved to play soccer. The rule book for soccer is like about this thick, blue book, and they have every rule in there. I learned the rules of soccer by getting out there and playing, thank God. Because I guarantee you one thing for sure, if I had read the book and then came out to play, I would never have appeared to play soccer, I promise you. I love playing soccer and it is wonderful, but I learned the rules by going on the field and the guy in the striped jersey, he'd blow the whistle and tell me, sorry, you can't do that. And as I grew into really appreciating and understanding the game, I didn't commit fouls because I had a much broader perspective and attitude and disposition toward it. Early on, yeah, it was good to crock a few guys and take them out and things like that. That was a level, a stage of growth and development. But really playing soccer, hey, you appreciated the value. Can you imagine if there were no laws in a soccer match? Wow. It's a little bit like, hey, I was coaching kids, you know, at 7 years of age playing soccer and their parents needed as much coaching as the kids did. I noticed that. But there were, you know, 22 kids on the field. You had one on each end. They were doing trapeze artists, the goalkeeper, swinging off the crossbar and doing gymnastics and various things. The other 20, they were all following the ball. And it took so long to get him to say, stay here, you don't have to go chasing it, it will come, and it'll come your way, and you will have a straight up competition with your opposing number. And when we could get them to stay here and not just be chasing innately, then we were able to begin to really play the game pretty well. Understanding the law is one thing. Being able to see what it really is another. It's extremely important. I want to do two things to finish up. Help me out, Ryan? Can you wake up and help me out? Yeah, join in. Thank you. Okay, turn to page 66 in your green book, please. Okay, the first reading for today. This is from Sirach. Sirach was a sage. In the Old Testament experience, it was priests, prophets, and sages. Sages had a very specific responsibility. They were reflecting on the identity and destiny of human beings and what would come about for them. Here, this sage, he's writing around 200 to 190 BC. Sirach, Ben Sirach is writing, very wise and very understanding. And here's what he says, and it's a powerful and wonderful understanding of law. He said, if you choose, you can keep the commandments. They will save you. Just if you choose. All this other thing, you have to. God has not said you have to. God innately reverences our freedom. He doesn't intervene. He doesn't stop this from happening. He has given us absolute, total, utter freedom. If you choose, you can. Obey the commandments and they will save you. They will bring you in the path of salvation. If you trust God, you too will live. He has set before you fire and water. To whichever you choose, stretch forth your hand. What a brilliant reflection. These are the two choices. You have a freedom to choose one or the other. You have a freedom to choose fire or water. They are the two opposite perspectives. Choose one. Whichever one you choose, he will permit you to have. Before man are life and death, good and evil. What a profound understanding. Remember the Beatitudes that we talked about 2 weeks ago and being salt of the earth and light of the world? That's what he's talking about. A person doesn't develop an attitude just by willing it or thinking it. They develop an attitude by making the decision between good and evil here and here and here and here and here and here. And making it again and again and again and reinforcing it in their lives. That's how they become holy. Unless our holiness surpasses that of the scribes and Pharisees, where are you going? Where in the world are you going unless your holiness surpasses that? If you're only observing law for the sake of law, where are you going? The law is an invitation to love when we really experience that God is moving in our lives. Otherwise, check it for yourself. Check your own personal movement. The difference between the one who is really holy and the one who is evil and who is filled with vile and filled with obscenity and difficulty and a kind of a resistance to life, they are persons who have made the other choice again and again and again and again. It's a great reality. Golly, read this over again. Sirach, man, what a sage. He says, whichever he chooses, that is life and death, good or bad, evil or good, whichever he chooses shall be given him. Immense is the wisdom of the Lord. He is mighty in power and all-seeing, and the eyes of God are on those who fear him. He understands man's every deed. Wow. What a truth. And no one does he command to act unjustly. Wow, what a brilliant reflection. God does not command anybody to act unjustly. They choose freely to do that. It's very powerful. And then the addition, to none does he give a license to sin. It's an individual choice. So we shall talk more about law as we go along. I said I wanted to accomplish two things. I wanted you to understand that first reading, because you won't find any better in terms of understanding, hey, the value and the purpose of the law. The reason the law exists is to direct us toward the good that he wants us to attain. In the Our Father, we say, thy will be done. We're praying that we would be in communion and that we would make the appropriate choices to experience communion with him. Wanted to accomplish two things, that you would understand that reading, and secondly, that you would take in your hand these books and that we would set a new record for people holding these books at St. Paul Parish, you know, because we have a tendency not to pick them up. So I thought that'd be really good. Now, nothing bad happened, right? So let's pick them up and sing when we are invited to, and let's use them and celebrate them, and we'll grow and move from maintenance to mission.